This week on the WCBS Health and Wellbeing Report, we talk with precision medicine doctor Florence Comite, founder of the Comite Center in Manhattan, about what she calls the twindemic, or coping with both the flu and with COVID, and how it will affect us this winter. Dr. Comite, we're talking about a twindemic, as you call it. Is this flu season going to be even worse because of COVID?
I think so. I think it's going to be a little scary because people won't know what they're sick with. And that's what happened last year in New York City. How do you know if you have a fever or a cough or a cold, whether it's COVID or it's the flu?
So how do you know?
There's overlap of symptoms, but there are some significant symptoms that are just COVID. And there are some symptoms that I feel could be just the flu. So here's the difference. If you have loss of taste or smell, that's almost always COVID. You can't say 100% medicine, we almost never do, but the loss of taste and smell points to COVID. And that does not usually happen with the flu. It can happen with a sinus infection. So if a flu leads to a sinus infection, then you might lose your sense of taste and smell. Fever, cough, aches and pains, that could all be related to COVID as well as the flu. Those are overlapping symptoms. What we would hope is that most folks are going to get a flu shot and they will then hopefully decrease the risk of getting the flu. That's really the way to do it this year.
Could getting a flu vaccine compromise your immunity and increase the risk of getting COVID?
No, I don't think so. With one exception, getting a flu vaccine, if you're about to get COVID, could undermine your immune system. But the hope would be if you've got a flu vaccine and you're wearing a mask and you're practicing hygiene, washing your hands, staying away from crowds, not gathering with a lot of people without a mask, and keeping yourself generally protected, then hopefully you're not being exposed to COVID and you've gotten your flu vaccine or you're going to get it. And most of us would be protected from the flu.
And what about the opposite? Could the flu vaccine actually improve your immunity against COVID?
I don't think that's the case. I don't think that the flu vaccine will actually protect you against COVID. I think they have completely different ways of hitting your body. I think that there's a lot of work being done about what COVID does to your health and how it impacts your system. There's work being done that suggests it targets certain cells and it causes a whole different stream of downhill effects. For example, it can cause coagulation, meaning blood vessels can collapse, and that's why we see heart attacks or seizures in the most extreme cases. The flu, you can see pulmonary symptoms, which you see with COVID, but quite in a different way expressed. So whereas even in the flu and with COVID, symptoms can be mild, there can also be very serious symptoms, more serious with COVID than with the flu. I think the odds are 10 to 100 times more likely that COVID can be serious and admission to a hospital and death rates are far higher with COVID than the flu. Because, of course, we have ways of preventing the flu. Mm-hmm. It's not 100%. Make no mistake. The flu does kill. The flu does lead you to the hospital. And the flu shot alone does not protect you 100%. But it does cut down on the rates. And depending on the particular year and how well the flu shot matches the particular virus and the particular protein, it's as high as 60%. But there is some good news. And what we've heard is in the Southern Hemisphere, the flu, the incidence of the flu has been minimalistic. The folks have hypothesized down there, the medical society, that it's because people are protecting themselves. And so there's been less contagious disease because of the mask, because of increased hygiene. So that's promising. Will it spread to the Northeast? Will we also see that? We're hoping for the best.
Do you know if we can get COVID and the flu at the same time?
Yes, we can. And there are reports of that. So you would have to be tested. And we do test. So last March and April, when we had the epidemic in New York City, we were testing not just for COVID because people were scared and they had other symptoms, but we were looking at the respiratory viruses. And there were people who could have COVID and they could also have other respiratory viruses like the flu. In fact, we just had a patient who thought they had COVID and the report came back that they had a rhinovirus. So there are other viruses you could get and laboratories can look for those viruses as well.
Do we have an idea of what percentage of people have had the virus but no symptoms? Is there a way of figuring that out yet?
Yeah, there is. Actually, the data is promising, and that looks like it's about 50%. So some of the individuals that we've tested, they've been pretty shocked, because we give them the report and we say, your data looks like you've been exposed to the virus. Congratulations. You don't have to really worry, at least for now and this year. And many of them have called and said, well, wait a minute, I don't understand. How come? How I've not had a symptom? And here's where my theory, it may be that you got the virus and you were exposed to it, but you got a small dose, your body recognized it and went ahead and created antibodies, and we were able to measure those antibodies. Mm-hmm. There are some confounding factors, and they're interesting. So sometimes we will see it in a partner, or, you know, a husband, a wife, and then it'll be confusing. Well, how could I have gotten it? And my partner, we're stuck together here at home, and we've been isolating.
Yeah.
And why? And you're not always just at home. You're out and about. So that could be one reason. The other reason is that sometimes it's delayed. So one partner got it first and the other partner was exposed, but the antibody shows up a little later. We've seen that. We've also gotten questions when a person gets retested. Let's say we do the test, but then they see another physician. The test is run in another lab. For example, we do quantitative testing, meaning we look at the number of the antibody, and there are two antibodies, and the test can be used in using a different machine and a different qualification. And sometimes one test will look positive and the other test will look negative, but they just measure it differently. And if you don't make the cutoff or you're in a borderline gray area, it doesn't mean you're negative. And so we've had to explain it, and it always turns out to be correct that you have been exposed. The tests are good. The tests we've always used have been vetted and are excellent tests right from the get-go, because we've worked with Boston Heart, we've worked with Quest, we've worked with any number of labs, and we make sure, going right to the source, that they're correct. So there's any number of reasons, and if you're one of the lucky ones, and 50% or so are, then you've been exposed, and congratulations, you are protected, which is good news.
Yes. You hear so much about talk about testing, but I'm wondering, unless you have kids or grandkids that are going to school, or you're going to see them, or maybe you're having a medical procedure of some sort, why would you want to get tested? Just to know, especially if you're working from home and you're relatively quarantined.
You should get tested. Here's why. There is another test that we do in our center at Comité Center, where we look at cytomegalic virus. Now, this is a very common virus that 40 to 50% of us had as children. And years later, we have learned that affects the immune system in different ways. And so we monitor people for that virus, and we know that it could continue to cause issues that you're not even aware of, except if we look for it. And so with COVID, the same is true. And we don't know if you can get COVID more than once. We hypothesize that you can, because other COVID viruses have caused recurrent infection. But it would be important to know if your body is exposed to it, in my way of looking at the world. Now, not everybody is going to agree with me. You've heard me say, yes, two doctors in a room, and sometimes more than three medical opinions. Sometimes it's five medical opinions. Knowledge is power. That's really true. And beyond knowledge is wisdom. And since we're still searching for what is the issue with COVID, what is it going to cause, and what are the problems you might want to think about, and how would you offset it? Should you do vitamin D? Should you do vitamin C? What about zinc? Does it cause coagulation? We've been very fortunate. In my center, not one person ended up in the hospital, not even in the hospital. Nobody died, but they didn't even go to the hospital. And we are very selective. We base what we do on data. So I'm very pleased, because we look for emergent disease before people actually get sick. We want to stop it in its tracks. And if you are sick and you have evidence of diabetes, or you're even on insulin, we reverse it. We stop it in its tracks, and we take people off insulin and get them healthy. And that's a very important consideration. So understanding what your body is tackling beneath the surface is a very important issue. And that applies to COVID. In fact, knowing that COVID tackles the weak among us. So a lot of the early responders who were sick and died, sadly, it was because they were sick under the surface. And I think you've heard me quote before that if you are diabetic, many of those folks, four times as many, including my colleagues, my doctor colleagues, ended up on respirators. Fortunately, many of them survived. But if you were a diabetic and you didn't know it, you were eight times as likely, eight times, twice as often to be on a respirator. So let's say you had diabetes, but no one has diagnosed it. And how many among us have been told by their doctor, you know, your sugar is a little high, you should keep an eye on it. Let's keep an eye on it. Try to eat better and work out. And that rarely makes a difference because many people do try to eat better and do try to work out. And it rarely turns around your sugar as you get older. There are lots of other factors. And so that's why knowing that your body tackled COVID and you do have antibodies, which do disappear, but underneath they can affect your immune system, and it's wise to know. So I'm glad I know that I had it, and I'll be vigilant in the future, and I'll know if I get it again. I think that's really critical.
I think people also, they're having trouble not only with COVID, but not knowing so much about it, and there seem to be all these changes. I think knowing maybe if you have it would help you cope.
Exactly, and help you help the people you love cope. For example, I've had big clans of people we take care of who are constantly asking, should we get together? What about seeing this person or that person? And knowing someone is more vulnerable gives me the ability to say, okay, you can do this, but be aware that this person should not be at the gathering. For example, the airplanes are very cautious. And when you're up in the air, in fact, they've shown that flying does not put you at greater risk. Now, the airports themselves are pretty empty, but there are particular cautions you should put in place. And if you are at risk and you're immunocompromised, but you have to fly or you need to visit an elderly relative, your mother, your father, somebody that you love dearly, and Zoom doesn't cut it, you need to know what to do. And without knowing your status or those you love, that's more complicated. And it's sad not to be able to see a grandparent or a newborn child. So you don't want to miss those events in life, but you want to do it cautiously.
I guess that's a good way to approach Thanksgiving, too.
Exactly. And people are. So that's been happening in New York, at least now since March.
Yes.
We've had to be very careful. And in some ways, I consider myself lucky because having gotten COVID pretty early on, I was diagnosed. I was sampled March 18th as the guinea pig here. And I was told the next week, and I needed to understand what it meant for everybody. I can't say it was fun, but I was lucky to get through it. I did have a side effect. One of my own conditions erupted because I had to stop some of my supplements, or I chose to stop because it wasn't easy to take them. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a particularly rough case, but I suffered one of the consequences of the coagulation because I stopped the aspirin and it caused some bleeding from my gut. And so I immediately went back on the aspirin. It stopped what could have been a potential hospitalization if I needed surgery on my gut. And luckily, immediately starting the aspirin stopped the bleeding, which almost sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? I was bleeding and I had to start a whole aspirin again, but it worked, and that helped me. So getting tested, coming back to your original question, makes sense. And now we have the tools and the tests are excellent. In fact, here at the center, we're going to get the acute test, which has been out there and available. So we've been on a list to do testing. It is available in most states, I believe, not everywhere, but places we've been, California, New York, two different tests that we like, Sophia and Abbott. So if you need to go somewhere quickly, you can make those calls. You could search online for urgent care centers. So I think we're the first to line up and you can get a response immediately. What we recommend is when you do that, also do the PCR test that is the swab. It's no big deal. I think people used to say it felt like a brain swab. I do it practically weekly. I do it on myself now. Did I like it in the beginning? No, because it's something we're not used to. But in the end, you know, you get used to anything. It's fine.
Not to minimize the virus at all, but is it important to note that a large percentage of people who get COVID recover? What is the percentage now?
Yes, but most people are recovering. I think that their hospitalizations are about 400,000. Deaths are now about 200,000, I believe, far greater than the flu deaths, but the deaths are much lower. I think we've learned high doses of steroids. Two different steroids have been shown to be very effective, methylprednisolone and dexamethasone, around the world. And so that's been kicked up. Vitamin D, both IV as well as oral. I caution people, though, to be careful if they're going to take vitamin D over the counter to not do mega doses because it's fat soluble, particularly if they're at risk for kidney stones, calcium type kidney stones. Sometimes it's hard to know, but if it runs in their family, then they could precipitate a kidney stone. That's not so much fun.
No.
So I caution people not to take more than 1,000 or 2,000 international units a day. If they know their levels of vitamin D and it's low and they have a doctor monitoring them and they don't have kidney stones, they can go a bit higher daily. Vitamin C, which if you take too much, you just have very rich vitamin C urine, so that's fine. And zinc. And stay healthy, you know, stay strong, eat well. Empty calories are not so good.
You would think that people would be more into self-care and taking care of, focusing on their health, that they maybe didn't when they were working and running around before COVID. But is it really the opposite? A lot of people are depressed.
I think it's really hard. I think depression, the rates of depression have gone up because think about it. The gyms are closed. In my building, you can't go into the gym. You have to actually make appointments in the gyms that you might have memberships in. Most people can't afford, they don't have room, or they can't afford to put a Peloton in, even though the sales of Peloton skyrocketed. Yeah. Things like Mira and Tonal that you can get for your own home and work out. You can work out on Zoom, you can work out on an app. But your mood has to be there. You have to want to. Also, think about comfort foods. I mean, what do we do at night sometimes when we're depressed? You know, we pull out the pint of ice cream. And also, it's lonely. There are lots of folks out there that have no one. They're alone in their home. They don't even have the socialization that you get at work. One of the things we're working on here is a new company that's coming out of the work I've done in the bricks and mortar, where we can help people help themselves. Where if we get a little bit of data about them, we can tell them what's happening under the surface and give them a direct messaging through an app and tells them what they're at risk for and how they can make a difference in their own health and feel better. And that can range from physical signs and symptoms to mental issues. Because sometimes just feeling poorly makes you not want to take care of yourself. So there are a lot of triggers for why people may not be into taking care of themselves. Like I know my husband, Mark, he set up the little workout gym. And just this morning, I heard him talking to his trainer through Zoom. You can also have a standing desk. You can work and stand. And you actually burn more calories when you stand and eat. So if you're going to have that brownie, be sure to stand at the kitchen counter and eat the brownie. You burn about 18 more calories per bite. And you do, but I'm teasing. But you really do.
That's great. You really covered it very well. Anything else you want to throw in?
Be aware that if you're feeling sluggish and slow, call a friend, go for a walk, wear your mask, try to find your happy place. In California, when we're seeing patients, one of our patients who's a really wonderful guy and very into self-quantifying, he's very strict with himself, but biking really makes him feel good. So he knows he's not in the mood to do anything. He grabs his bike and he goes out for a ride. Nice. And he's managed to corral a lot of his buddies who work really hard, and they all meet up for a bike ride. Find something that brings you to your happy place. That will help all of us, particularly those of us who've learned that your job may not start up again for a number of months. You won't be seeing your work colleagues. And it can get lonely. It may seem like fun to be home and working from home for a while. It may feel like it's slowed down, and that's great. But after a while, it can get pretty lonely.
This has been another chat with Precision Medicine Dr. Florence Comite. We hope you'll join us next week when we'll be talking with family therapist Ron Valano about dealing with the outcome of the election. Until then, I'm Pat Farnak. Be safe and take care.